I'm going to start anyway. We'll see if we can get any relief from the noise. My name is Larry Geller, president of Kukua Council. I'd like to welcome everybody here today and thank you for coming. We have the opportunity, a rare opportunity, if we can hear anything, to hear from the two Honolulu mayoral candidates today. And I'd like to explain a couple of announcements. One is the bathrooms. We always got to start this way. The bathrooms are around the corner, and there is a key on the desk. So take the key if you need to go out there. Louder than this? Okay, hang on. We sent an emissary out to see if we can intervene with the noisemakers. But great day for fixing the street, I guess. The weather is good. The rain stopped, and they're going to do their digging. Hey. Thank you, Malia. Thank you, Hawaii Reporter. Terrific. Okay, let's see. First of all, bathroom around the corner. We'd like to ask those of you who don't know Kukua Council to consider joining with us. It's only $5 for membership, and there's papers and forms at the desk. I need to say that. In October, we have our community forum where you could all come back and tell Kukua Council what is important for us to pick up during the legislative session. You know, and we advocate on behalf of our members. Oh, well. I guess I'm just going to have to begin. Yeah. We're glad to have an opportunity this afternoon to share an hour with the candidates for mayor of Honolulu in the 2012 election. And we're going to give everyone a chance to answer questions. So basically, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give each candidate, at first, the opportunity to speak for up to 15 minutes. During this time, you should each have a white card. Please use that white card to fill out your questions. And we have two officers of Kukua Council are here. They're collecting the questions, and they're going to sort them out to make sure there are no duplicates. And we ask you to phrase your question so that it might apply to both candidates, not just to one. That's really important. If the questions are duplicate or pretty much the same, they'll pick the question that would apply to both candidates. I want to just do a short introduction. I'm not going to go into great detail. I got this from the Wikipedia. You can find out more about the candidates from the Wikipedia, where everything, all knowledge is connected to the internet, or you could go to their campaign pages. And if there's any literature that the candidates have brought, please pick it up before you leave. So with that, a very short introduction. We have I think everyone here knows the candidates already, and they're both experienced public servants. So I'm going to limit my introduction to their experience. Either, in my view, would make a great mayor for the city of Honolulu. Here's your chance to find out how they differ. Kirk Caldwell was the 13th mayor of the city and county of Honolulu. He was in office from July 20th, 2010 to October 11th, 2010. He was a member of the House of Representatives from the 24th District from 2002 through 2008 and served as the House Majority Leader between 2007 and 2008. On July 20th, 2010, Mr. Caldwell assumed the position of interim mayor after Muffy Hanneman resigned to compete in the gubernatorial election. Mr. Caldwell held the office of mayor until the special election was held. Ben Cayetano is the 5th governor of Hawaii. He was in office from December 2nd, 1994 through December 2nd, 2002, and he was the first Filipino-American to serve as a state governor anywhere in the United States. Prior to that, he was Lieutenant Governor of Hawaii from December 2nd, 1986 through December 2nd, 1994. He began his career in public service in 1972 when he was appointed to the Hawaii Housing Authority. In 1974, he was elected to the State House as a Democrat representing the Honolulu District of Pearl City. So as I said, both men bring quite a lot of public service experience, and that's all I'm going to say. There's a lot more, you know, that you can find about them, and I urge you to look. But let me turn over. What we're going to do is 15 minutes first, up to, you know, as much as they want. And I'm going to give this microphone to our question panel. After that, they will begin reading the questions.
Thank you, Larry. Aloha.
Aloha.
First, it's such a pleasure to be here. You know, when I was a member of the legislature and later when I became governor, I worked with many senior citizens, and I noticed that many of you are still around, like me. I think it's really important for everyone to recognize the fact that we are creatures of our own experiences, and I think our values are shaped by the experiences that we undergo. And so let me tell you about my personal experience with my father. My father retired in 1973, and when he retired, I took a look at how much money he was getting from Social Security and his pension, and I knew right off that it was not enough for him to live, at least reasonably, in Hawaii. So I asked him to come and live with me. Dad, I said, come and live with me. And he did. He did from 1973 till his passing in 1994. Taught me a lot about the needs of senior citizens, because in my father's last 2 years, he developed dementia. And as time went by, my brother and I, you know, were taking care of him. But as time went by, we found that he needed with each passing month, virtually, a higher level of care. And eventually, we went from adult daycare to finally having to go through the anguish and the pain of deciding to place him in a residential adult care home, which we did. My father, one of the things about dementia is that it causes people to be somewhat mischievous at times. And my father ran away quite a bit. He was very well known to the Waihewa Police Department. And once made the TV news because the police department's policy was if the person was missing for a certain period of time, I think it might have been about 6 or 8 hours, they would issue an all-points bulletin. And so here it was, my father was missing, my brother and I couldn't find him, we're driving all over the place. And so I think it was on the 6 o'clock news, it came out that Lieutenant Governor Ben Caetano's father is missing. And we lived in Mililani at the time, and at about 9 o'clock, someone who saw the news, they found him in Paoa, which is like, how did he get there, you know? Well, he still remembered how to use his bus pass, so one of the things that I did after that experience was to politely, you know, tell my father, let me hold your bus pass, Dad, and I did. Well, he passed away in 1994, the year that I was elected governor, but he made such an impression on me that I thought to myself, you know, once I was watching the news, and I remember it was a story about a person, a son in Chicago, I think it was, who had locked his father in the bathroom. And, you know, on his face it seemed really cruel, and I remember my staff talking about how terrible it was. But, you know, I could feel something for that son, because Chicago is such a city where if you don't have the services and you can't do anything else, you know, if your parent, your mother or your father gets lost in that city, it is, you know, danger is over on the horizon. And so when I became governor, services for our senior citizens was very, very important to me. And I think that with Marianne Seeley and people like that, I think we did a decent job. My wife, Vicky, led a committee, and they studied long-term care for a full year, came out with a recommendation for a statewide program. The legislature called it Vicky Care. It's like Obamacare, you know. And they actually passed it, but it was vetoed by Governor Lingle. And I understood why the governor vetoed that bill, because it was quite costly. But it told me about the need and the reasons why some of these programs don't get funded. Money is at the root of all of these issues. Senior citizen programs don't get funded. It's because usually, in terms of political power, they are way at the bottom. You know, they don't have the same power as unions or a big business. They simply don't. And usually their programs are on the block when it comes to cutting discretionary spending. I'm told that, for example, that there has been no increase in the base budget for food services for the past 11 years. How does that happen? Again, it's a question of funding. Which brings me to what we're going to talk about basically today. Why did I get into the race? Why did I leave? Why, after retiring as governor, I decided to step down and run for mayor? It's because I'm really very, very concerned about what I believe is the reckless spending policies at City Hall. I've spoken to people who need the handy van, and they've all kind of problems with the handy van. About a third of the vans are should be replaced, are in disrepair. The services, often they try to, pack the vans, and people miss appointments for dialysis, or they miss appointments in getting back home. And now with the bus services curtailed, that only added much to the problem. For senior citizens in general, the best way you can help them is to keep the cost of living down. For example, I've had senior citizens email me or call me or tell me personally that they have a tough time paying for the increases in their bi-monthly sewer and water fees. Well, you better be prepared for more, because 5 years from now, in 2017, the average family of four will be paying $396 for their bi-monthly sewer and water fees. Okay. This is not my numbers, it is the city's numbers. From 2005 to 2017, you will find that the average bi-monthly sewer and water fee will have increased by 341%. And those are the kind of issues that, in particular, I think senior citizens are concerned and should be concerned about. Not only senior citizens, but our young also, who struggle to make a living over here. We don't want them to leave. And if we don't want them to leave, then we need to make sure that we do everything we can to keep the cost of living here down. Hawaii is the third most unaffordable state in the union to live. If you rank states with a population of less than 1 million, we are number one. Highest gas prices, our electricity rates are triple the national average. I could go on, but I think you get the idea. So taking a look at the expenses that the city faces, and this is how I always look at a problem. I try to take everything into account and not just focus on one particular issue. Then I found, and I might add, that after I came out of retirement, about a month and a half later, I had eight former cabinet members from four city administrations join me. Six of these guys were retired. They came out of retirement to help in the campaign, because they were concerned, as I am, about the spending policies at the city. Just to upgrade the sewers, $5 to $6 billion. That includes a $3.5 billion mandated upgrade by mandated by the Environmental Protection Agency. Why was it mandated? Because three past administrations of mayors had neglected to do anything about it. And finally, the Sierra Club and the EPA had to take the city to court, and the consent decree was agreed to, and the city now has this huge mountain to face. Our water system, to upgrade our water system, which by the way, averages about 350 water main breaks a year. A couple of weeks ago, there was a water main break in on the windward side of the island. It shut virtually everything down. It was such a huge water break. Those of you who live there know what I'm talking about. What will it cost? Conservative estimates, $5 to $6 billion. Our roads are rated third worst in the nation. A friend of mine from Sri Lanka jokes with me sometimes, and she says, you know, whenever she goes back to Sri Lanka, she feels that the roads there are better than our roads here. The city basically has a pothole type of response. You find a pothole, you call the hotline, call the city, and they'll send a crew out to fill up the pothole. That's not the answer for the long run, because engineers will tell you that if all you do is refill a pothole, then what happens when there's a rain? It begins to erode the road base underneath. And then what happens when traffic goes over the pothole, the fillings begin to once again disperse, and you find that the pothole reemerges. That's not the answer. That's a short-term fix. You need to look at a long-term fix. And what is that long-term fix? It is to do what they do in other states. First, you try to establish a reserve maintenance fund. And secondly, you develop a plan to go out and repave the roads. Repave the roads, not just fill the potholes. Now, that'll take some coordination, because the way the city is set up right now, the coordination is not very well organized. One of the problems is that if the one department goes out and repaves the roads and doesn't coordinate with the border water supply or the wastewater, they'll come back and have to dig up the roads to install the sewer lines or repair the water lines. This is a recurring problem, and I have a solution to that problem. Now, let's talk about the neglect. How did these problems occur? Okay. My truth squad, I call these guys the truth squad. I'm talking about the eight city cabinet officers who have joined me. They tell me that, they haven't kept up with the upgrade and the maintenance. So, for example, in testimony before the city council, the head of the Board of Water Supply was asked, well, how many miles are you supposed to do to upgrade per year just to keep up? And he said, his name was Wayne Hashio, and he said, 30 miles. All right, how many miles did you do in 2010? 1 mile. Lately, they've been doing an average of 4 or 5 miles, I've been told. Same thing with the sewers. We calculate that you need to upgrade at least 20 miles of sewer lines a year. Because some of these sewer lines are old. They're like 50, 60 years old. They need to be upgraded. Average completion or upgrades, not 20 miles, over the last year, 6 years, I mean 6 miles. So we calculate that they're 47 years behind in wiping out that backlog. That kind of inattention to basic services cannot be tolerated. Why? Because I think that in order to keep the city beautiful, in order for the city to prosper economically, you need to have those very, very basic services. You don't buy a new home or an old home just based on what the home looks like. You get your engineers, you get people to take a look at what's under the ground, whether the foundation is one that's going to last. And that, I think, is a big issue for me. My priority is keep the city beautiful. Don't block the views with huge structure, and upgrade the basic infrastructure, sewers and water and roads, and find the $800 million it's going to cost to just upgrade our storm drains, and that would be my first priority. Thank you.
Good afternoon and aloha.
Aloha.
You know, I want to thank the Kōkua Council and Larry Geller for hosting this today. I want to thank the seniors who are here today and everyone else for participating. I think these kind of forums really give people a choice to see the two people running for mayor. And I think it's really important, particularly in a race for mayor, even more than governor or any other race. And the reason is really simple. The mayor deals with the nitty-gritty issues of a city. First and foremost is public safety, police and fire. If we're not safe in our homes, if we're not safe in our businesses, and as we go about our city business every day, then whoever is mayor should not be mayor. Number two, sewers, water, garbage pickup. These are all things that mayors deal with that governors don't deal with. And if they don't work well, you guys get upset pretty darn quickly. I'm passionate about these issues. That's why I'm running. I loved serving in the city because I felt every single day when I went home, I could tell my wife that I made a difference in someone's life by making sure a critical public service was delivered to that person. And I want to get back there to do even more of that kind of thing. I am passionate about this job, and I want it back. Now, I wanted to devote the rest of my time, of my 15 minutes, to talk about senior issues, if that's okay with all of you. Because I think that's what you're here to hear about. And in the questions, we can talk about a lot of the other things too. Number one, first and foremost, we need to do a better job getting direct funding for our seniors at the City and County of Honolulu. As you know, we're the only county who doesn't do direct funding. Now, of course, we do have other programs like the Handy Van and our bus system. Both of them award-winning. They can be improved, but they're award-winning and they help our seniors. But we need to do things where we can make sure that seniors are taken care of in their homes through direct funding sources. And I'm committed to do exactly that. I'm also open and want to look for ways to find additional funding sources in addition to direct funding. When I talk about direct funding, that means taxes or fees raised by this city going directly into kapuna kind of care projects. And then if we could find additional sources, whether they be private sector, 501c3, state, I'm open to all of that. I would want to work with you to do exactly that. The next thing I want to do, and this is really critical, is to create a senior summit within 120 days of my becoming mayor, if I'm lucky enough to be elected, to gather all the providers. That means private sector, 501c3, the federal guys, the state guys, and of course the city guys, to sit around and come up with a plan, a type of skeleton or an infrastructure that we could then talk about how can the city ramp up its delivery of services to seniors throughout this island. Because I believe we can do a much better job, and as all of you know, we are an aging population, and we owe it to our seniors to help them age in place and live life at the highest quality possible for all the sacrifices they've done for all of us. Ventura County has these summits, and they work. And instead of reinventing the wheel, we can just look at one of our counties in California to follow the same program. Third and very important, pedestrian safety. You guys know we have a shameful statistic in terms of our seniors getting injured and killed in sidewalks all around this island. We've talked about it for years. When I was the majority leader, we teamed up with AARP, put in legislation, passed legislation, and yet our seniors still being killed. Not acceptable. You know it's not acceptable. I know it's not acceptable. And we need to do more about it. I'm committed to do exactly that. We need to care for our seniors as if they're our grandparents, our tutus, our grandpas, and then act from that place in our heart of caring. How do we do that? We identify the most dangerous pedestrian crossings on this island, which we know where they are. We have a list. And then we take action. And it's not prohibitively expensive to take this action. Inline lighting in crosswalks. About $20,000 to do this. That's where you push a button because you want to cross. And what happens? You got lights in the ground in the crosswalk that are blinking yellow, warning cars that someone's stepping out into the sidewalk. When I was at, this is the infrastructure improvement I support too, by the way, new roads, or repaved roads. We did one when I was at the city. It's down on the south end of King. But we need to do this throughout the city. The federal government has funds for exactly these types of projects. And I want to do that. What else can we do? Put lights around crossing signs that blink also to remind us that before we cross, to stop, to look, to pay attention. Another one is putting signs in the middle of crosswalks right in the medial strip. When I was in the House representing Manoa, a very dangerous crossing right by the Starbucks. Grace knows about this. I wasn't at the city then, I was at the state, but I cared and I worked with the city and got a sign placed in the middle of the road. It said, pedestrian crossing. It can bend if a car hits it. That simple action has reduced traffic accidents to pedestrians in that sidewalk. That's cheap. We're talking about plastic bolted into the ground. If it gets ripped out, we put another one. We can do that. Or painting on crosswalks the words, look. So before you step out, you're reminded, look both ways. Again, a very inexpensive thing to do. I am passionate about doing this. The other thing, complete streets. Many of you in the press have covered the passing of legislation both on the state level and now on the county level this year by the City and County of Honolulu, County Council, to mandate complete streets throughout this island. I love the concept. Now I like it partly because it requires off-grade bike paths and I'm passionate about coming up with alternatives to cars and more buses. We need to do a better job in those areas, but we need to give people alternatives on how to move around this island, and off-grade bike paths are part of it. But complete streets requires sidewalks, safe pedestrian crosswalks. It mandates it every time we build a new subdivision or improve a road. And through a long period of time, we will do a better job because of complete streets. But I want to wrap it up earlier. Do more now and save more lives. Fifth, I mentioned age in place. We all know in study after study that the cheapest way to take care of our seniors and the healthiest way is to allow them to age in place. Not be in a care home, but in their own home, surrounded by their pictures, their pets, their mementos of raising families in these homes where they can be healthier, both physically and psychologically. How do we do this? One is we do make sure that our handy van services improve. They were pretty bad when I was at the city. They got better while I was there, and they need to even be improved more. It is still a work in progress, but it's something I'm passionate about and committed to doing a better job on. Another issue that people don't talk about, fast-tracking of permitting for people who age in place when you need things like additional stairs, ramps, holds in bathrooms and in showers and going up your front door. If you deal with the city and county of Honolulu just for these simple kind of changes so you can stay in your home and be safe, you go through the long process as if you're building a new home. We should have a separate section of the building code for seniors, for home improvements, to allow you to age in place. And I'm committed to do that. Finally, the last two issues. Number six, re-energize and refocus the Elderly Affairs Division of the Department of Community Services. The Elderly Affairs Division is the one that deals with us folks, our seniors. We need to re-energize this division. We need to inspire it to do better. We need to have them remember that the people they're caring for are their parents, our parents, and to do a better job. And as mayor, I'll make sure I instill that in them by working with them on a regular basis, delivering that message and making sure then they go out and actually implement these ideas. And it requires working with the State Office of the Aging. It requires working more closely with the federal government, but to really embrace their job and to know that they can make the difference. Finally, number seven, embedding senior issues in every single city department. ENV deals with our sewers. Everyone in this room, it doesn't matter whether you're a baby or you're a senior. You want your sewage to go away. And there is issues regarding seniors that deal with sewage. Road repaving. It's not safe for you guys to cross streets if there's pukas all throughout them. And yes, they do need to be repaved and maintained. And when I was at the city, I expedited $155 million worth of road repaving in 18 months. Can we do better? Yes. Do we need to do better? Yes. But road repaving makes it safer to walk on streets for all of us, including seniors. It crosses every department. Parks and Rec. How many of you seniors use our city parks to walk in for exercise or just to go to participate in senior programs? Can I see a show of hands? A bunch of you. It is a hidden treasure. We need to make sure we maintain our parks well, but we also need to make sure that our senior programs are designed to do the kind of things you want them to do and are open in the hours that you want them to be open. That you can show up at the Manoa pool and swim when you need to swim, to get the exercise you need and to be outside and get the sun and get your vitamin C. So these are just some of the issues that I'm passionate about, that are seniors related. I know one thing about my style. I work really hard. I'm out all over this city. You may see me sign waving almost every morning and a lot of the afternoons. I'm at the games, whether it be UH football, Pop Warner, at every bone dance, at every community function, meeting as many people as I can. Because it means knowing what this community is about. And the way you do that is by touching people, hearing their stories, understanding their lives, and then committing as a public servant to make a difference. So I appreciate you allowing me to talk, and I look forward to the questions. Mahalo.
Thank you. Is this on?
Yeah.
Let me just say what we'll do.
Is this on?
Yeah, this is on. Okay. We're going to now let the question panel read the questions one at a time, and the candidates will answer one, two, and the second one, please hold the mic, because next question, you be first. One, two, one. Okay?
So let's see if we can somehow be fair. Go ahead.
Okay, the first question was actually created by our board of directors at Kukua Council. Some of you, some of the remarks have touched on this, but we're asking a little more specificity. All of the counties do fund some transportation and staff, but the other counties fund home and community-based services at significant levels. Maui puts in another $3.8 million. Big Island, another $2.3 million. We note year after year that the city and county does not go beyond transportation and staff. So the question to you folks is, one, is it appropriate for the city and county to be funding home and community-based services? And secondly, are these kind of levels of funding appropriate? What are your thoughts are? Maui's like $260 per senior or something like that. So sure. Please respond.
Who goes first?
So, Jim, thank you. You know, you're right. I think the figure is by per senior. Maui spends $130 per senior. Big Island spends about $60 per senior, and Kauai, $21 per senior. And this island spends in direct services nothing directly to the seniors. We provide about almost $500,000 from the general fund, our general fund, to the staff of the Elderly Affairs Division, and it pays for salary, but it doesn't go into direct services. And so as I mentioned, I'm committed to find that money. Now let's just think about how much money are we talking about. It can be significant for a county of our size, comparing our population to Maui, right? Maui has a little over 200,000. We have 953,000, so many more seniors. But let's say, and I know we can find the money of $500,000 to use for direct services, so it's not just going into the salaries. And that is a start. That is a start. I'm committed to do that. The kind of things I'd want to see in terms of direct services are things like bathing assistance, home delivery, meals, companion services, prescription drug delivery. This is what other counties do, and I think we need to start. And just like on any effort, it begins with first steps. Should I be elected? Should I be the honor to receive enough votes to win? At this elderly summit, we will be sitting down to talk about how we do this in a way that doesn't impact negatively the other providers, some of who are doing these kinds of things, or maybe even teaming up with some of these providers. Right? Meals on Wheels delivers to seniors. Do we want to compete with them or do we want to partner up with them? Maybe partnering up is a better way. I'd want Meals on Wheels to sit at the table at this summit to talk. But I am passionate about doing it. Thank you.
Thank you. You don't mind if I sit down, do you? Kirk used the word passionate, I by my actual count, about 8 times, you know. One thing, when I hug my wife, I don't have to tell her that I'm passionate, she feels it. A senior citizen conference, you know, is it okay now?
Yeah.
Many of you here have been through that already. There have been conferences up the yin yang, you know. We know what has to be done, and Kirk knew what had to be done when he was in the city. The problem is that the administration focused mainly on the rail project, and that's why the buses are being shortchanged, were being shortchanged, you know, and that's why the focus has been on rail to the exclusion of the sewers, the water, and everything else. The rail project is the most costly in the nation at $250 million a mile, if not the world. You have to wonder why we are doing this when we have a population of 953,000 and the projections are that by the year 2030 we will increase to about 1.2 million. You'll find if you talk to experts that you need at least a minimum population of about 2 million to make it work. So, and they don't talk about the operating and maintenance costs. You know, the operating and maintenance costs will triple. The bus subsidy today, funded by your property taxes, is about $140 million, I believe. In 2030, it would be $462 million. These are the city's numbers, not mine, okay. Triple, that would require tripling the real property tax. Now, Kurt has experience in increasing the real property tax. I mean, let's be candid and talk Turkey here, okay? Because he proposed a 9% increase to the city council. He raised the vehicle registration tax, he raised the fees to go to the zoo, to the play golf, and all of that. And you know, what do you have for it? Passionate about everything he does? Well, apparently he hasn't paid attention to the city's parks and restrooms, which are filthy. So, we don't need a conference. This is the, you know, 28 years in public office, and I found that this is always the escape hatch for people who don't have a real plan. Let's call a conference. Let's put together a task force, okay? Put together a task force, come up with conclusions. Let's do it like we tried to do with Vicky Care. Right? We tried to do something. So, if I'm elected mayor, you can bet your bottom dollar that I will pay attention to these services and give it the same kind of attention that I gave when I was governor of this state. I'm not running for any political reason. I'm running because I'm really concerned about not only you as senior citizens who live on fixed income, but also our young who struggle just to make a living and feed their families here. That's what I'm concerned about. Handy van, you know, during the debates in the primary, Kirk criticized Peter Carlisle for taking credit, as he put it, for everything that he did. Well, Kirk, if you're going to criticize Peter for taking credit for what you did, then you should be able to stand the jerk for what you didn't do. And during the time there is no evidence whatsoever of you trying to do the things that you said that you're going to do today. So we both have track records, you know. I may not be the most popular guy in the world when it comes to doing things, but check my record and you'll see that if I say I'm going to do something, I will do my very best to do it, or regardless of the political cause.
Thank you. The next question is, the city is selling its stock of workforce affordable housing without firm no displacement conditions. How will you address the issue of displacement in the selling of these properties?
Excuse me, my phone is ringing, I forgot to turn it off.
My next question is on technology, so...
Okay, repeat the question, Jim.
Yeah, the city is selling its a stock of affordable housing, and there's issues relating to displacement of current residents. How will you address the issue of displacements, and would you support conditions that prohibit that?
Well, you know, the selling of the housing to the private sector is not a bad idea. When I was governor, we did that for Palolo Housing, and all you need to do is go to drive down to Palolo Housing, and you'll be able to tell right off the bat which side went to the private sector and which side did not. I spoke to Ron Lim about this. Ron was Jeremy Harris's housing person. He also was in my cabinet. And what's important, Jim, is to make sure that the conditions of the sale provide for people who are going to be displaced. That the conditions of the sale include covenants which assure that the people who are in need have a place in this new housing. Otherwise, it's a mistake, I think, to convey city housing to the private sector. Second, I think that you need to work with the state, because really it's the state that has the bulk of the housing responsibilities. And I spoke to Governor Abercrombie about maybe having a joint meeting, state and city, try to leverage the resources to provide more housing. Displacement is a big issue, but you have to crank it into the terms of the sale, I think, to deal with it.
When I was at the city as a managing director, we worked on the project that you're talking about, selling of our housing units, 13 projects. I do believe that it's best to have the private sector manage these housing. Government is not as good as the private sector, particularly a 501c3. So I support the idea. Now, having said that, there are a couple of the projects here that we're talking about. The ones that are for the lowest income group. And we do face problems here from what I've heard. I'm not at the city when this sale went through. And that some of these people can least afford to pay rent somewhere else may have to leave these units. I find it very troubling if that occurs. And I think that in the finalizing of the contract for this sale, that particular attention needs to be given to this fact, that these people in the most in need are not displaced so that these housing units become closer to market. Because we're not serving the market here. It's not marketplace housing. And so I think it's holding the purchaser's feet to the fire. Once they get the contract, they're motivated to make a profit. But we're not in the business, the city is not in the business of providing housing at a profit. But we want the private sector to find a balance between the really good projects and those for those most in need. And I will do exactly that. So I want to thank you for that question. Jim, I do want to respond to one other thing. It took about 45 minutes to find out the real reason why Ben is running, and that's because he wants to kill rail. I'm running for all the other reasons. I gave my listed them for you, both in the seniors' issues and the others. Whoever is elected, whether rail is built or not, in the first 4 years of a mayor's term, in the second 4 years of a mayor's term, rail will not be up and running. But all the other issues we're talking about here today will be. You will demand that sewers work, that water works, that roads are repaved, that grass is cut. And that is why I'm running. That's why I went to the city, and that's what I want to do as your mayor. Thanks.
The next question relates to the Waikiki Natatorium, and is from one of our media guests today. Part one is, what do you want to do with it? Part two is, do you have a comment on the reports that negotiations have been going on more or less outside of public scrutiny?
Well, regarding the latter point, I think that the media pretty much discovered the emails is what you're talking about. And so, you know, disclosure of this kind of conduct is the best deterrent to it happening again in the future. Now, regarding the Natatorium, this has been a thorny issue that has been around for more than 20 years. There are good arguments on both sides of the issue. The governor, if he rescinds the previous executive order, is in the driver's seat. Now, my personal opinion about this is that the beach there, Taimana Beach, and the area where the Natatorium is probably the last beach that we will have for our local residents in Waikiki. If you take that away, you pave it with concrete, you're taking away something that you can never put back. Now, I intend to talk to the governor. You know, as you know, we're pretty good friends. I want him to explain to me why he proposes to, you know, doing what he's doing, and also explore whether there can be a compromise or meeting of a middle ground. I think the governor is very, and I don't blame him for this. I think he wants to have concerts and volleyball tournaments there. I don't see why that can't happen without building a stadium there. You know, you can always move in bleachers and do things like that. That's the kind of compromise that I'm talking about. Because once you take it away, it's gone. You can put it back.
So when I was at the city, we helped put together a task force on what to do at the Natatorium. It's been 30, 40 years of discussions. It's been a political football between the Waikiki community and politicians for 40 years. In the meantime, it continues to crumble, fall apart. One day we're going to get a massive Kona storm and part of it will fall down, or we'll get a small earthquake and maybe it'll fall down. Enough talking, it's time for action. This task force that met over a period of about 6 months with the stakeholders from all the community, including the veterans. So remember, the Natatorium was built for those who gave the ultimate sacrifice in World War I. And the recommendation on a vote by a majority, wasn't every person, voted to tear down the pool section, which, by the way, if you swim in it, even when it was an operating pool, you're like 4 feet below the top. You cannot even see the ocean. It's like you're swimming in a tub, a concrete tub. The recommendation was to tear down the pool, put out groins, and create more beach. because of the very reason that there's a huge demand. Kamana Beach, one of the few beaches that a lot of local guys still go to. Seniors go to go swim out to the windsock and back, to gather and talk story. And the arches were going to be moved Mauka a little bit and be kept as part of the memorial. Task force voted. We started moving forward, and EIS is in process. Money is being spent. Now we find, through the article in the Star Advertiser, that stuff is going on behind the scenes, that I think the city has stopped with the EIS. The governor is interested in maybe taking it back. They wanted to see, according to the story, who won in the primary. I don't know if they're waiting to see who wins in the general before they make a decision. But here's what I do know. To restore that place as a beach volleyball court, you have to rebuild the walls. I mean, the rebar is rusted. The cement is coming off. $30 million. Now, if I were mayor and Governor Abercrombie wants to take it back, rescind the executive order, I'd say be my guest. Take it back and spend the money. But my request would be, fix it. Get it back up to where it was. Make it that world-class whatever it is that people want to make it. But I hope this isn't the beginning of another 40 years of a political football, which is shameful. Right in the heart of Waikiki, right at the base of Diamond Head, honoring those who gave their ultimate sacrifice in World War I, we dishonor them every day by talking and not acting. The governor decides he really doesn't want to do the EO, rescind it, then I want to proceed as the task force voted. Tearing down the pool, moving the arches back, putting in the groins, and creating beach for our residents. Thanks.
We're going to go 10 more minutes because we started 10 minutes late.
How can you help the homeless?
This has been one of the most difficult problems for governors, mayors, and lawmakers everywhere. It is a very, very difficult problem. You know, the homeless population is basically, from what I've been told, divided into three categories. There's one category of people who have issues regarding drugs or mental problems, emotional problems. We need to find some way to reach out to those people and give them help. There's another part, maybe another third, who are people who are just down and out. They want to get out of the homeless shelters, but they don't have the resources to do it. Well, we need to help those people as well. There's maybe a third or 20% of the rest of them who kind of like it. You know, I know that this may sound like a hell of a thing to say, but they don't mind living there. It's free rent and all of that. I'll tell you what, if I'm mayor, I'm going to get those guys out for sure, because the more of them stay there, and a lot of these guys are able-bodied and all that, you know, the more of them stay there, the less resources you have for the people who really need. This is a difficult problem, but one way to deal with it is to try and create more affordable housing. And when I was governor, my administration created more affordable housing than the other administrations combined, because we focus not on home ownership, we focus on rentals, because that's what the disadvantaged and the poor need. They need rentals. They're not going to buy homes, okay? And the role of government is to provide that. Now, there's certain things that can be done. Again, the state and city pooling and leveraging their resources is one. But I think that also the income levels that are used right now to base or to decide who can qualify for affordable housing need to be looked at again and readjusted. I've heard some complaints that they may be a little too high. If so, that means that people who don't make as much money have less of a chance to get in. So you need to do those kind of things. This is a very, very difficult problem. And city and state need to work together. But mostly, I think, mainly, You need to support the private sector, because the private sector is the body that's carrying the load. Government can provide money, but the private sector does the outreach and everything else.
So, as we approach the issue of affordable housing, we all got to remind ourselves to do so with compassion in our hearts. I mean, these are the least fortunate people. This church, in fact, has worked with the homeless, and we need to remember that. It's my understanding from providers that about a third of those who are homeless are, in fact, are veterans who come back from multiple tours of duty in Iraq, Afghanistan, and they come back and they need help that our country doesn't provide them, and they end up on the streets. So we remind ourselves of that. At the same time, I approach it in this way. Number one is enforcement. When I was at the city, I worked on drafting a bill with a group, a panel of people. One of those summits that Ben talks about, actually you get people together, you listen, you come up with a recommendation, and you implement. In this case, we implemented legislation that prohibited camping in parks. It worked. It was enforced by the police, and where did the homeless go? Sidewalks. We had no law for camping on sidewalks, because who used to camp on sidewalks? Who would go set up a tent on a sidewalk? So I worked on legislation, pulled together a working group. We came up with legislation. Unfortunately, when I didn't get elected as mayor, it died. I'm passionate about this issue. Even though I was back in the private sector where I spent most of my life, I'm not a professional politician, I went to Tulsi Gabbard, said, this is a really good bill. It's your Kuleana, it's your committee that deals with homeless. She took the bill, she made it better. It became law that prohibits camping on sidewalks. And for a while, that law was being enforced and people were being moved off the sidewalks. Recently, not so good. Just this morning, coming over here, I drove down Barataria, the Honolulu Art Museum. The Occupy Honolulu guys are all along that sidewalk. No one owns the sidewalks or the parks. They belong to all of us. And as mayor, I know that. And I'm going to enforce to make sure that the sidewalks and parks are available for everyone. So you seniors who may be needing some assistance when you walk, don't have to walk around someone camping on a sidewalk with a tent or worried about a rope or a stake that you're going to trip over. Now, it's crazy though to move the homeless from sidewalk to park to bushes to sidewalk to park. We need to have them into shelters. The thing is that there actually is space in many shelters. They don't want to go because they want to bring their drugs and alcohol with them. But I was told by the providers, and the reason why I support enforcement is providers say if you make it convenient to stay in the parks and sidewalks, they'll stay. If you make it less convenient, they'll move into the shelters where they get treatment, they get help, they get jobs, they find more housing, permanent housing, and they get taken care of. That's why I do it. The other things I would do is I do believe in safe zones, finding land away from everywhere else that our city owns. I know of a couple parcels. We grade it. We put in basic bathroom facilities, washroom facilities. We allow, instead of moving them around, if they don't want to go into a shelter, they can go into a safe zone area. A provider would take care of it. We put it up for a bid. The police would patrol with the idea they stay there for a limited period of time till they could get back on their feet. Working with providers. The final thing would be a program that's worked on the mainland. You take the most chronic homeless. Remember the articles in the paper this past week? Great Star Advertiser articles on homeless. They talk about the most chronic, those that are addicted to drugs and alcohol. The guys who called the ambulance over 100 times, costing all of us thousands upon thousands of dollars. We address that problem by working with the providers and getting into programs called Housing First, in which they come in with their drugs and alcohol. Not a good thing, but at least they'll come. And then you have residents in there, treatment people, that get them off of their addictions. Yes, there is recidivism, but it's cheaper than what we pay for right now. And then finally, it is affordable housing. Ask any provider, ask Catholic Charities, ask IHS, ask any of them. We have the highest cost of housing in the world, almost in the country for sure, and we need to build true, more affordable workforce housing. And I would team up with guys in the private sector. Look at Marshall Hung. Any of you know who Marshall Hung is? He does these projects. They're beautiful. They look beautiful decades after he builds them. He's going to be doing a new one at the Star Advertiser building down in Kapi'olani. Thousands of units are going to be built. This is workforce housing. This helps relieve that pressure and brings down the price of homes. I want to partner up with guys like that. Build more of that kind of housing in the urban core, closer to work, closer to things that homeless people need, health care, treatment facilities, where they don't have to struggle to get to those places. And that means having it in Honolulu, downtown. Okay, thank you.
No questions. The commercialization of our beaches and parks has become an issue, particularly with Bill 11, the Kailua Beach Ban. What is your vision for the interface between commercial activities and our coastal parks and beaches?
Let me share with you my philosophy on this, Jim. About 35, 40 years ago, the Royal Hawaiian Hotel used to have Kamaaina Night. And my wife and our two kids took advantage of this. And in the morning when we went to the beach, it was packed with people. And to the left of me, you would see people from Tokyo, St. Louis, Missouri, and the same to the right. My feeling was that we were the only local residents on the beach at that particular time. And that use of that resource, I think, is very important. I understand the need and for tourism in the state and the need to support the industry. But also there should be places where the local residents are spared commercial activity. Now, on Kauai, at the Hanalei River, there's a controversy that brewed for about 20 years. The politicians there couldn't make up their minds. The Zodiacs were speeding up and down the river. I went there and I took one look at it and I saw to the side all of the local residents who could not use that resource. And I issued an executive order banning the Zodiacs from being operated there anymore. Today, they're at some other place. I believe in this. The Kailua, the bill prohibiting commercial activities in Kailua does not prohibit tourists from going there, but it prohibits the kind of commercial activity that I think is not conducive to an area like that, which should be kept mainly for local people. And that's my philosophy, and that's why, for example, I have concerns about the Natatorium, for the same reason that I had concerns about the Hanalei River and Kailua. Take a look at my track record. You know, we bought Kaiwi to keep it from being developed. We bought Lumahai Beach, and we bought many places, land banked them so that they would be preserved for local residents and to keep the environment beautiful.
So this is where Ben and I disagree. I don't support Bill 11. I think it's a sledgehammer approach to a unique special problem in Kailua and Kaneohe. And I think it goes way too far. Bill 11 prohibits commercial activity on any beach. That's the opinion of Corp Council. That means this coming winter, when you have the Triple Crown of Surfing, and they're out at Pipeline, they're out at Sunset, they're out at Haleiwa, they're violating this bill. If it's enforced, I question that. But on its face, illegal, because it is a commercial activity. People are making money at these surf meets, and they should. And this is good for business in Hawaii. Even if you're not in the tourist business, the folks on the North Shore benefit. Yes, there are crowds, but we all benefit. My point is, every one of us in this room benefits from our tourist industry. It's the number one industry in our state. It raises the revenue both on the state and county level. It pays for the services that we have in addition to what we pay for. And to look at it as an enemy is a mistake. It's easy to do, by the way. Sometimes I get mad. I get upset when I go to Kailua, and we go. And I can't find parking because it's full of tourists. But I know this too, when our daughter Maya was young, I would rent a kayak and paddle out to the Mokus, to go ashore of the Shearwater Colony, to teach her about nature and seabirds. So local people use these services too. Waikiki. If you look at the zip code just for Waikiki, 28,000 people live there. That's a lot of local people living around Waikiki. And I can promise you, they go to the beach too, because they live in a beautiful part of the world, in one of the most beautiful places in the world. I go there every weekend. I go stand up paddleboarding now, used to go surfing. I come in, I sit down on the beach, I talk story with my buddies before we go home. And a lot of other local guys coming in from surfing from Pops, doing the same thing. It's not us against them. It's about all of us living on one small island and living better. So what would I do? I would work with the council, with Ikaika Anderson, who represents that area, and say, let's regulate based on time, place, manner. That's what we do for the surf meets. That's why I brought up that example. They come in for permits from the city. We decide when, how, where. We talk about traffic control. We talk about where they're going to set up. And we try to make the best of a situation. Why can't there be commercial activity at Kailua Beach on a weekday morning between 8 and noon? How many local people are at the beach? Yes, there are people at the beach who reside there. But it's most busy on the weekends when we're not working. This is a more reasoned, balanced approach. And it doesn't pit local against tourist. It doesn't pit local against the visitor industry that we all need. Thanks.
Well, we come to the end of our hour commitment. We offered everyone an hour with the candidates, and that hour is up, including all the delays due to the road repairs. So I think the message for the day is something to do with road repairs. I don't know. But if you, I regret that we couldn't get to all the questions, of course. This Thursday on Hawaii Public Radio, you'll have the opportunity to ask more questions on Town Square of Mr. Caldwell. Program begins at 5 p.m. on KIPO. And then on October 18th, Governor Cayetano will also be on Town Square. And same time, 5 p.m. on 89.3 KIPO, you'll have a chance to call into those programs and ask your questions at that time. So with that, I'd like to thank both candidates for sharing their time with us. And this is absolutely great. Thank you for coming. And thank all of you for coming.